loves company. This old dog sings harmony.
It's a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash.
My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
And I'm Gary Roby from Ferris Bueller's Minute Off.
Hey, Gary, great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Happy to be back. Finally get the little bit about Dan that I kept referencing yesterday. It's right on the cusp of the minute. I couldn't remember.
It's all relative.
And so that does lead us to this being minute 142 here on Tuesday. And it starts with Lori apologizing to John and ends with John offering to show something to Lori. Hey, I got something to show you.
No. I keep rewatching the first couple seconds of this minute. Like, his reaction when she apologizes to him is so, like, earnest.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he referenced it minutes ago. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, his upper body and breathing. Mm-hmm. And like, kind of like, you know, in a, the way you breathe sometimes if you're a bit upset, you know?
It's... Yeah. It comes to him like it's a gut punch. Like, he wasn't expecting her to say anything about it. Or like, he didn't know that it happened, even though he knows it happened.
I think for the longest time, I thought this was some sort of like, attempt at humor on his part because of the earlier reference to it. Yeah. And I think, you know, once I began to like pay closer attention, it, you know, he really sells the idea here that he literally didn't know they were sleeping together in this moment.
Yeah, I was looking between minutes for my copy of the comic, but I couldn't find it in just like a couple seconds. But I feel like I think he talks about how he knows things. Like, he seems to have knowledge of things he will discover, but not until...
Yeah.
Not until the moment where he learns that information in a very complicated way. Mm-hmm. He has knowledge of things he will learn, but it's still going to be a surprise in the moment.
Yeah.
It's hard.
And I like the way that he says, you slept with Dan, almost as if it's being said through like gritted teeth of a scornful like ex-boyfriend, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's just on the cusp of being angry.
Well, and he goes on, like he almost feels betrayed by it, because he continues and he tells her, like, I've told you multiple times that you are my only remaining connection to humanity, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this hurts for him to find out that, like, the one person he thought of as precious has let him go in a way, or moved on, or whatever you want to call it, like, distance herself from him. I mean, he's the one who put distance between them. Sure. He's literally on another planet, but still, it's like it's the last kind of severing of that tie, or that's how he sees it.
Yeah, it's a great line, and it definitely shows up in the trailer, so lines like that tend to, I think, have more weight when they're in the movie proper. So I like the moment with the, you know, why would I save a world I no longer have any stake in? But at the same time, it rubs me the wrong way, you know. It's because going back to this thing of like, he can choose to do nothing, or he could choose to do everything, and either way, he's not going to be out any effort or any, you know, what does it matter if he saves the world? Just like he's saying, it doesn't really matter if I do save the world, you know? I mean, a lot of that stuff will come up during their tour of Mars, so I don't want to get too far into like...
Do you think he has a sort of like nihilistic view of everything? Of like, well, I can save the world, but it won't... In the long term, it's not going to make a difference. Like, the world will end, period. Mm. Like, will at some point. Why bother?
Yeah.
Very selfish also.
Yeah. I definitely think there's some of that nihilism, especially in the the later stuff when they're actually touring Mars and he's talking about that Mars gets along just fine without any life and that kind of stuff. But
there's definitely that view of like humanity might kill itself off or die out, but like life will get along just fine. Like Earth has made do for billions of years. Like we're a blip, you know? I don't know.
Sure.
That's rough. That's also a very negative take that I don't really like to subscribe to, but it's easy to see it.
Backing up to like the just the first couple seconds, and it's I usually don't comment on like the attractiveness of the actors, but this blue lighting is very flattering to Malin Ackerman in these minutes. Like when it just his the light that he puts off, it she looks really good in that blue glow, at least here in these Mars scenes.
I love the detail, the fact that like we when we see him directly, you can see that blue aura around him, but I like that that light illuminates others. Like it spreads and you can see the kind of glow across her skin. Like it's nice.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that like it makes me think of, this is like a silly comparison, but it makes me think of like what they do with lightsabers in the new Disney movies.
Yeah.
Where like there's that fight in the forest at the end of Force Awakens and you have both the blue and red and they're like casting shadow on each other, and it's good stuff.
Sure. Helps to have those like those new, you know, force effects, I think is what they're called, lightsabers that, you know, they it's basically what they're using, I think, on set is the ones you can buy now. I mean, they're probably quite a bit nicer,
they look
but
really good.
They're still the ones that light up and you can smack together, so
No, and it's just a thing that like so the light that he gives off that's like casting across her face like makes him feel more physical in the space.
Yeah.
Like it's not that he just has an aura, but that it is an actual visible light that he's giving off.
Yeah, it was a brilliant decision to have Billy Crudup, you know, wearing the light up pajamas, because you know, you couldn't have, I don't think you could have replicated that convincingly, you know, throughout all the scenes. I think it really does make a big difference to have the light there on the day.
I really love the intimacy between the two of them in these minutes. Like it's just such a, it's like quiet and there's like a, like an intensity to it, but it's so, I don't even want to say muted. It's just, I'm a fan of moments like this in film where it's like, we're just going to sit and have a back and forth for a few minutes. And it's not even like, it's not exposition heavy either. It's they're both working through something. And there's a, I keep using the word intimacy, but there's an intimacy in that that I really like. It feels very, you know, he might have these godlike powers, but I think my power just went out.
So, listeners, looks like we just lost Gary. He is experiencing like a power outage in his building. So we're going to move on for the rest of this episode without Gary, and then we should be rejoined by him tomorrow. So let's continue, shall we?
One little bit of an issue I almost because I'm looking at minute by minute, you know, I don't think I ever noticed it when I watched it in full, but Dr. Manhattan's voice in this minute at different points when, you know, it's going from one camera view to another, what have you, it's his voice just changes a bit in like tone and atmosphere, you know, there's something around it that doesn't quite sound right. You know, if it's ADRing that's happening,
sure,
it's causing this or what. But,
yeah, I know what you mean. I noticed it a little bit more with just really the way he looks. Mm-hmm. I almost mentioned it last minute because there was like a stark contrast to where at one point he's talking to her from one camera angle and then he looks, you know, very, I would say, slim. I mean, he's throughout the movie, he's been very muscular, very, you know, a very built guy, but he looked a lot more thin, a lot more slim, like his neck looked longer. And then towards the end of the minute, And then where this minute picks up, he looks more, I guess, beefier. Like his neck looks thicker. He looks, it almost looks like it's a different physical performer across a couple camera angles. And yeah, and I know what you mean about the vocal, like the timbre of his voice changes. It seems like, I guess that just comes from shooting this stuff across a few different days. So maybe just performance wise, you get slight variations like that, or
even reshoots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He interestingly talks about, referring to Mars, about his red world.
Yeah.
And then, back to Lori saying to her, means more to me than your blue one.
I do love that line, especially preceding that with the, when you left Earth. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, I get what he means when he says, does that not show you that I care? But then going back to kind of my whole issue with John in these minutes is you don't need to care just to save people. Why it doesn't matter to him, but basically what he's saying is I no longer am with you, so I don't care if you're back on Earth and the planet blows up. So that's a harsh reality. Is that gonna do it?
I think so.
All right, let's wrap this one up so we can hopefully get Gary back tomorrow. In the meantime, listeners can find us on Twitter and Instagram over at Watchmen Minute. We've also got a TeePublic little store. You can just search Watchmen Minute and get all your merch there.
And then we have our Facebook page at facebook.com/Watchmen Minute. You can talk with us about the Red World or Blue World and which you'd like to save at our Facebook group, the Crimebusters Listeners Society. So this was minute 142. We should be back tomorrow, hopefully, with Gary, tomorrow on Wednesday for minute 143. And until then, who watches the Watchmen?
We do.
Watchmen are over. You can hear him moan, you can hear him wail.